Thank you very much for the kind words, for inviting me here. I'd like to... I'd like to begin by a little preamble to this particular work, or this book. It's come out of an idea that was floated in Limerick a couple of years ago at the White House gathering, similar to this gathering. And I read a lot of the new poems in this section, the first section of this book there, and then Barney Sheehan asked me what was I doing with those poems, what was I going to do with the poems. And I said, I don't know, I'm going to send them out to somebody and hopefully publish them. And Barney said, you know, we do it. So that's actually how this revival press began, from a very, if you like, simple suggestion. Then I went to work on the idea, and I brought the poems from different books together. It's a hard task. There are poets here today who have done this, Patrick Galvin and Desmond O'Grady have both been through that grueling task. And indeed, I went and wrote to Patrick to ask him to do some introduction, a little introduction to the poems. And I was deeply honoured by what he wrote, and indeed Desmond's preface moved me also. So this gave me great encouragement to continue with this whole idea of the book. And it came together through what Mary McAleese said to me one day in the museum in Ballyferrisford about 8 years ago. Those of us who drink from the well should never forget those who dug it. And for me, Patrick and Desmond have dug good wells, and I, for one, will not forget that. I'd like to begin with a poem that has a deep effect on not only myself, but on probably people here who were reading the newspapers or looking at the television that particular evening after this event in Madrid. And for me, it was quite a horrendous event because it happened quite close to where I live, and I still had to go to work. Another 11th in the library for my students. Today I went to work with the weight of death and mutilation in my shoulder bag, incalculable loss, like sinking stones in my pockets, the pens and pencils rattling to the sound of severed bones across the floor of a bombed train, the books and papers smeared with destiny's blood stopped in its tracks. Opening the library door, I saw everything in its place except myself. The tidied shelves and shiny plants, hoovered carpet and clean glass reflection. But my chair was no longer mine, beside a desk that pined for somebody else, the in-tray for the reach of another hand. Then duty slowly called me to my station in the face of a child who needed a book about animals in danger of extinction. And moving on a little away from that, I think I should go straight into the title poem, The Well. When I gazed into the well and saw the horror, not even the minor miracles of Borkus could lift my head to face the one-legged man with a handout for a coin on my street corner, or contemplate light on leaves in the Saroya garden before daily routine began in a library born from a shoebox and grown to half blossom. Everyday magic was reduced to banality, as though witnessing a parade of Pavlov's dogs, prophecies of Pound's botched civilization, the new order clamoring for more war with God and Allah in the cockpit, guided by remote experts who dropped bombs before breakfast with one eye on the slush movie. Perhaps I should have stayed in bed, tortured myself with images from any rat-infested cell, or simply run my finger over a small-town Midwestern windowsill to reveal raw vengeance, or planned for shelters under bloodied skies, innumerable maimed to heal, innumerable dead to bury, the stones thud in the muddied well. What can I say for my wish to come true? That old Europe is not a sick animal dying by the roadside with green juice oozing from its mouth, gasping for its last breath before the hero of the hour comes blazing to the rescue with friendly fire. That I have wiped the yawn from my boots after trampling through fields of earth's heaven, returned to my street with the clear well of my being sated by the taste of spring water to quench the thirst for destruction, complete the library to pass on, face the one-legged man, never again to doubt the minor miracle, the end of knowledge with the death of every old African, the well dug by ancestral sweat for me to drink from, the caves echo at my back, resounding. Thank you. This is a poem about people, remembering people. Fallen leaves. I used to think they were all put back on the trees each spring by the keepers of parks and glens, raised from soggy graves to dazzle and dance in sunshine and wind. Their sacred hearts a redemption of souls, cracked spines healed, proof of miraculous resurrection. But such thoughts dwindled as I heard of friends trampled on, no nimble Cuchulain or light-footed deer to guide and shelter them in groves through winter, bellow their hearts to glow like maples in summer, frail as leaves they fell, never to recover. I'm often asked how I write a poem, you know, living in Madrid, and this is one explanation. Conversations with plaques. Do you mind if I not leave the mic? Bother me. Conversations with Plaques. In my stride along the same route home from work all year round, I use the distance to unwind, think myself into moods to tackle ideas impatient for completion. When least expected, I am joined for a block or two by Hernandez, who slows me to a snail's pace, more suited to shepherds with time to kill or poets who have found their rhythm. I learn much from him as we walk along Conde de Penyulver, touching on cradle songs of the onion or the three hearts, life, love, death. Then he is gone back to his prison wall, now an old woman's home. But I am not alone for long. Quiet as a butterfly, Lorca slips in. He talks about his childhood in Granada, how he is fearful of departure, and why he must run naked again in the meadow, show the mobs what they are made of, try and stop the hemorrhage with verse. Before I reach my front door, he is readying to leave his rooms on Alcala, prepare his farewells. Later, as I sit at my table and think about the company I keep, I know exactly what I must do. This is a sort of Metis's poem about that library experience. But it's not really anything to do with the library, except in sections and parts. And it's called In the Library of the Mind. There will always be streets full of hope, public places held together by strings of goodwill, handsome men and women out for evening strolls, the day's chores done, peace in dreams, the echo of birdsong in sleep. Children will climb into big books where ferocious animals protect them at night. The drip of evergreen forests slake their thirst, and each page a tactile discovery of worlds, escape mechanisms, pleasure in curiosity. But sometimes doors to knowledge are shut, information restricted, data manipulated. Truth lives in solitary confinement. Memory betrays thought, and effort is pain, blank, pointless. We become other shades of the self, grow forgetful, surrender to change, the winds whim, the circle's imprisonment, survive somewhere between blindness at birth and old age, the first and last spoonful. For the fortunate who have found plenty in bare necessity and see beyond walls, love glows in dark corners, shines eternally. What is made is reaped between the bloom and death of seeds, a stone's ripple. Now we're warming up a bit.
try to read this suggestion down there. Yes. Birthday candles. In the flames flicker the burden of the past and the creative imagination. The chords first sounding, tightening like the sinews of the solitary hero ordained to wander the labyrinth fields of myth and legends, worship at the feet of Gaul, return as the insular Celt with tracings of Western civilization to complete the Sura's vexing puzzle from your table in Kinsale, where you today may cast an urgent eye at scattered mounds of work like beehives waiting to be honeyed into books, until there is little left for the paperweight to hold but fulfillment in the sigh, your life's purpose released to burn with your inheritance, a teacher's and a poet's legacy.
Thank you very much, sir.
You're welcome. You're a very good audience, by the way. Thank you. Mary asked me to read this poem. Would like to do The Piggery. This is for Desmond's brother, Tommy. There was something of Munch's painting in the squeal at tea time, a deafening insistence, the smell forever to lodge under the nostrils like fear in Nessa's spaniel eyes when taking fright jumped the walls, swam the width of the pit into the safety of my flurried arms. It was my first real vision of the souls in purgatory, the damned in hell, the true meaning of labor, sweat of survival, and why the woman in the farmhouse kitchen reminded me of the loudest silence of all. I learned much in that factory of snort and grunt, sow and boar, how he rode her from behind until exhaustion buckled them both, why the gaffer sometimes escaped to the town's shipless embrace of fish-eyed Riverside Company. This, then, was my schooling in the raw world of man and beast. And the gravel pathway I spread now echoes with the crunch of other boots, but the scream of what art is prevails. Michael Hartnett, I would think, used to visit Cork in the old days. Friend of Desmond and Patrick, Mary. I'd like to read it in his memory. Oh, winged bird. Our fathers knew each other in the music of hurling, as we did in poems and songs. And though the years fill our lives with empty meeting places, I treasure your line, Bohar on Illa, gan Flach Villa Er. There was no poetry in my milestones then, you said. The people of Clonard and Ballymurphy would sort it out. But I wrote my southern comfort in hindsight to begin the search for Starkey's Gypsy Ballads in post-Lorca Spain, going home to Healy's fish-smelling balcony, I found a swallow dropped in from under the crucifying sun, a wren's handkerchief outside, wrapped in a blanket from a convent bed in Santa Teresa's Encarnacion. Over dinner, you let slip a jar of beetroot, and for years the stubborn stain on the tiles spoke to me of hedge birds claiming the ditch in spring, Temple of Lentine memory of children chasing a pig round the hillside garden. Much of what you trawled from your travels sparkles afresh on the page. The day your grandmother died during the Moroccan Madrid fling, O'Brueger's tortured tribe, the death of a Gaeltacht in Munavoy, love and exile in the pale, and all that mween of Baja seeping through the veins of a dangerous little bundle, a sickly child who was the work of two poets in two languages, who heard wings of parchment shake and bells weep. Moving from that Madrid Moroccan fling into another fling that took place a long, long time ago, Los Brigadistas in el Palacio de Deportes, 1997, when the Spanish government were honoring those who, on the Republican side, who fought in the Spanish Civil War. And I went to this event, and I was very moved by what I saw. I dedicated the poem to an old friend of mine, who used to take people around on a tour of the sites around outside Madrid, to where the battle took place, Tom Entwistle. And I'm going to be quoted by Rafael Alberti. Hermanos, Madrid con vuestro nombre se agrada y se ilumina. Brothers, with your name, Madrid is a better place or more illuminated. Shine. Who fails to feel the chill of their courage on our spines that night? The clenched fist of a more peaceful age, the glint of bravery in our medallion-less eyes, living idols this side of a 50-year-old Civil War grave. Those men and women come home to Spain to proudly claim their Passionaria invitation, walk unforgettable outlines of battlegrounds where comrades fell, gave their young lives to manure the olive fields with freedom. Who among us did not tremble when history spoke and legend, real as flesh, in voice recalled Galapagar and Maratha Cemetery outside the wall, where the dumped remains of the Jarama dead were finally brought in for honourable rest? And who, if Irish, failed to hear Woodcombe's plea to abolish the memory of all past dissension, embrace the international names of those heroic examples of democracy whose presence stalked prosperity's indifferent streets, reduce noisy bars to silence, raise questions in young minds about lost republics, the acceptable face of King Juan Carlos. Those men and women of a more generous age who fought and died defending its citizens. Amen.
Two or three more, and then move on.
There was a visit once upon a time by a man called the German writer Heinrich Wald to Limerick, and he wrote a book called Irish Diary. Like most news media, Limerick doesn't figure very favourably, as most of you know from the news. But I'm sure Cork suffers a bit of that as well, and manages to organise it a bit better, maybe. Anyway, this is a little comment on Heinrich Bowles' visit to Limerick. Heinrich Bowles in Limerick. Not a sinner on the street when you arrived. A sharp reminder of curfew times again. Then the churches emptied and you found yourself part of the miracle crowd. In the bar where you lodged, called the Green Door, I used to think of your visit when reading The Lost Honour of Katharina Bloom. You, among the great thirst quench and placing of bets, the laughing, well-fed faces, some of whom wished Germany had won. How you must have mused on the indifference shown to that destruction when you noted down in your Irish diary the nothing much to observe. Relearned the value of unlikely places, the black bread of those earlier years, left accounts that cut to the bone. Time to go to visit. There's a house in Athens that you had up there today. Go and visit it. Maybe the poem is on the wall there, no. Let me see. When I first went to Madrid in the 1980s, early 1980s, this was my impression coming into Madrid. I got there on the 12th of October. And the 12th of October is it's a very special day in terms of La Pilar and the discovery of America. And I had great fun once I got my Spanish under control, debating with the Spanish that it wasn't Columbus at all, it wasn't Cologne, it was St. Brendan who got there before. But, you know, given the writers of history, I suppose we have to take it for a fact that Cologne did get there, even though he actually thought he was in India. But Brendan knew he was there. Madrid through the eyes of a stranger. Crossing the French border by bus was like passing through a doorway into a warm barn. Finally, wearily, happily, in Spain, among the bar crowds and tapas, the third man music from the slot machine. Then south into a centre of bulls and late summer lust, football festivals, moose and park bulls, fountains frozen in a winter frost, where the sea is in a glass of gin, the bonnets wear bowler hats, English spoken near shops that sell caramelos, Paco, and the largest corsets. where the trumpet player balances a goat on a stool, the rug seller shoulders the sun, the dancer moves like a harlequin to the churning of the tune, where Hemingway never drank beer. This city of newly arrived unloved, with eyes like eager sailors, missing the beat but finding it among the bodega silence of Goya's old failures.
On the road with Hot Boy Tom McCarthy a long, long time ago. A vision of De Valera from a bus in Brewery. It was as though he cloaked the land again, and all past events seemed to melt with a sudden burst of sun. From where I sat, high above the maze, history was less than truth, and fact a thing of plastic consumed by the smallest flame. What matter then that he tried to shape a country with his own hands, or once transformed villages into Greek arenas when playing Homer at political rallies? In the darkness of his last years, perhaps this is what he wanted. An old man and a boy walking by the river of his childhood, the sun tossing fish into the sky, green fields spread out like Paxton Chatsworth, a warm eternal peace in Brewery where people could sit and drink Guinness. Not always at 10 to 3. And I think that, how am I doing for time? Two more? Maybe one?
Yeah,
yes, two, fine. Fine. I think this poem is a poem that could very well fit Patrick Calvin
the place.
Reading part of the early days during the Sony Toys in the 70s magazine. And later with no connection, I was very upset by about the death of Samuel Beckett. In actual fact, the words or the sentiment in the poem could very well be, as I said, for Patrick. So even though it's called Words for Samuel Beckett, I could very well say Words for Patrick Galvin. I read on, understanding less, yet I could not leave you. Each word brought me to the next. Then days of brooding, of difficulty, until little by little I saw the word complete, felt as my own heartbeat. I read on, the same problem, but always the word keeping me in touch. Out of such ignorance I learned much. I think the last poem I read, go back to the beginning again. I read from the new ones to the later ones, which you all no doubt guessed. I like to go to a place called outside Ballyfermot, Killamore, and I'll be down there again this week, some stage. And poem. That took me a long time to write in terms of thinking about the place I was actually looking at from your own front door.
which are often the hardest poems to maybe put together, which are so obvious or in your face. Not a bad expression there either, in your face. I'm trying to find it here. It's called Little Head. A view from Sybil Head, for my imperative. Advised to keep out, I urged my family on towards the top. In summer rain, across fields draped like green tablecloths, over the end of old Europe, until we found our spot and sat to picnic close to heaven under a southern sun, to contemplate the silent crawl of trawlers like ants on liquid crystal, the raucous racket of herring gulls suppering their young, while beyond the horizon a new empire flexed its muscles at the helm of a rudderless world. I could sense the electricity of imagination soaring about the three sisters like frozen waves along the line of landscape, memorials to the slaughter at Smerwick, near the scattered ruins of the poet's castle, its stones lodged in the softness of fertile grass, charged with history's legacies, the calm after battle, a peace found in graveyards, the victor's whim outlived by that Norman Irish gentleman, Peerish MacFeradair, master of classical Irish metre, supplier of hunting hawks, coaxed out of Brandon's mist to the Fitzgeralds of Desmond, for whom he held the blasket. And there, off Clogher, a vision of a young woman out of her depth on White Beach, as later an admirer would be in Dublin's insurrection, or the last islander to leave forever, to look back as I looked on Winestrand at Dunanore, where Spanish blood was spilt in vain, and all around us the tranquillity of bog, the poet stretched out in his ear. I will return alone in winter to feel the full rage of its beauty, the barbed wire of its wind, knowing I have been warned. For the meal of my life.